Mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, sisters and brothers, friends for life, won't live in the past. All I wanna do now is making it last.
Why should a life of peace be attainable and not seen as an elusive goal? Welcome to Making It Last podcast. I'm your host, Noreen Dillon. With me this time around is Douglas Noel. He's an award-winning author, mediator, trainer, teacher, and his work takes him from maximum security prisons, where he trains murderers, to be peacemakers, to the U.S. Congressional Budget Office, where he trains senior analysts how to de-escalate members of Congress. And he's the author of four books, and one of them, the latest one, is De-Escalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. So we're speaking with somebody who has experience in this area. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you, Noreen. It's great to be here.
So why should a life of peace be attainable and not seen as an elusive goal? Because a lot of people, especially for those who believe in Jesus, they're going to say, oh, only Jesus is the peacemaker, and there is no way that I can live as he lived. So for a lot of people, this is seen as something that is elusive. Talk to us.
Right. First of all, peace is something, so I guess we first of all have to define what peace is. Mm-hmm. Peace is not necessarily the absence of strife or chaos or conflict. It peace is how we hold ourselves. It's being calm inside ourselves when we're in the middle of all that chaos and messiness, and we are not getting upset ourselves, and we're able to hold a calm presence. So that's how I define peace. Conflict is inevitable, but the destructive side of conflict is completely avoidable. And the secret to having a life of peace is learning how to be emotionally competent, because almost all conflict is emotional. And it turns out that we as human beings are 98% emotional and only 2% rational. 98% emotional and only 2% rational. And we're taught exactly the opposite. Well, it turns out that 4,000 years of philosophy and theology are wrong. Neuroscience now shows us that we are emotional beings. We can't even be rational until we're emotional first. And yet, our entire educational system, the edifice of education, is based on this premise of rationality. And it's wrong. It's abusively wrong. So what we really need to be doing is devoting time and resources to learning how to become emotionally competent, learning how to listen other people into existence, learning how to read their emotions and reflect their emotions, learning how to be self-aware of our own emotions. And when that happens, neuroscience shows us that we are able to walk into any kind of conflict, any kind of difficult, chaotic situation, and be perfectly calm and present no matter what. It's extremely powerful. And it's why we've been able to teach, for the past 10 years, 11 years, murderers in maximum security prisons to be extraordinarily powerful mediators and peacemakers in violent prisons. And in fact, those prisons are no longer violent. We get letters from wardens all the time saying, this place has changed because of what you've taught the inmates.
Nice. Well, I'm not, it could be cultural, but not necessarily. So if and when you are having an argument with somebody or some sort of disagreement, and one person remains calm throughout, the other person might interpret it as thinking that they're trivializing the other person's feelings, or just not caring or in tune with what is happening. So what would be your response to that?
I would say that if you are truly not listening to the other person, then the speaker's interpretation that you don't care and you are trivializing their feelings would be absolutely correct. However, if you are truly listening to the emotional experience and reflecting that emotional experience back, then the speaker will feel deeply validated and deeply heard, and the argument will go away in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. And the problem is that we're not trained in these skills, because we have a strong cultural bias in the West against emotional competency. Everybody says what makes us human is our rationality, not true. But as a result of that myth, we spend all this time in education learning how to be rational, and we don't spend any time learning how to be emotionally competent. And that's the root cause of all our suffering.
How then
literally,
do we learn to be emotional competent?
Well, emotional competency consists of three basic skills: emotional self-awareness, emotional self-regulation, and learning cognitive and affective empathy, learning how to be empathic. The fastest way to learn those skills is through a process that I've developed called affect labeling, which is the process of ignoring the words, listening to the emotions, and reflecting back the speaker's emotions with a simple you statement. Mm-hmm. When you engage in that practice, you develop your own emotional self-awareness, you learn how to self-regulate your own emotions, and because you are reflecting back the emotions of the speaker, you're engaging in cognitive empathy, the three aspects of emotional competency. And with practice, over not a very great period of time, you become more and more emotionally competent, and you can no longer get upset by anger or upset people. You know exactly how to respond in any kind of emotional situation, and you actually become more rational because you are now a master of your emotions instead of being a slave to your emotions the way most people are.
I know you've been enjoying the conversation, but we're going to take a little break and get a word from our sponsor.
Are you struggling to become an effective communicator? Let Noreen Daly, the communication specialist, get you there. Services include communications consultancy, one-on-one coaching, public speaking and debate training, leadership and team building sessions, plus much more. Visit NoreenDaly.com for more info. Noreen Daly, redefining the way you communicate.
What you just described in terms of being aware, self-regulate, and having cognitive empathy, would this then apply across different contexts, whether social relationships, professional relationships, or would you say that it works best in a particular context, a particular type of relationship?
This is a foundational life skill that applies across the board, across culture, to every human being on the planet, because all human brains are hardwired the same way. We have the same, every human brain has the same functions, and it doesn't matter what your culture is. You may express emotions differently. You may have different cultural perspectives on emotion, mm-hmm. but the brain is still the brain. Mm-hmm. And the brain scanning studies that support this work demonstrate that. So you must be taught how to do this. It's not something you can learn necessarily. You're not going to just innately be able to do this. You have to be taught the skills. It's not that difficult. It doesn't take that much time. You just have to get the insights. And once you get the insights, then practicing the skills becomes quite simple. And in my experience, when people learn these skills, they completely change. Their lives transform completely. And it doesn't matter whether you're a murderer serving a life sentence in a maximum security prison or you are the CEO of a major corporation. Hmm. These skills change your life, every aspect of it.
Okay. A lot of us, we have to get to a point in our life sometimes where we recognize that we have to make a mindset shift to be open to changing how we relate to people. And I'm saying all of that as a background to, for a lot of us, this would require a mindset shift. With that being said,
yes.
Do you think then if these skills are introduced at, say, the primary school level, maybe years later we'd have a better society? And I use that term loosely, saying better society. And we'd have healthier relationships as adults?
I believe that if children were taught these skills at 4 years old, were supported in the practice of these skills, in 25 years, there would be no prisons.
That's powerful.
Because my experience in working with thousands of lifers and long-termers is that they are in prison because they were deeply emotionally abused. The stories that they tell explain why they did the heinous acts they did, but you also recoil in horror when you consider how they were treated as children. Murderers are bred not born.
Ah.
If we can validate our children instead of invalidate them, which is what all parents do now, even the most loving parents invalidate their children every single day,
mm-hmm.
it's extremely abusive. They don't even know they're doing it. But if they could learn how to validate their children instead of invalidate their children, we would live in a very different world.
Hmm.
So let me give you an example of what I mean by emotional invalidation. This is
okay.
really important.
Mm-hmm.
So supposing you've got a child, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, out playing, and she skins her knee and
mm-hmm.
starts to cry.
Mm-hmm.
What are parents likely to say to that little girl? Yeah, they're going to say something like, oh, it doesn't hurt. Oh,
right.
You're okay. It's not that big a deal.
Right.
Don't be a drama queen. Stop crying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grow up. Be a grown-up girl. Don't
right.
be a little girl.
Right.
Right? Isn't that what parents say?
Mm-hmm.
And same thing here for a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
What are you teaching that child when you make those statements? You're teaching that little girl or that little boy that emotions are bad.
Yes.
That you're wrong and bad and evil to have emotional feelings. Because the parents are invalidating the emotional experience of the child. And every study that's looked at this shows that when you do that, it's incredibly abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there's a study out of Southern California called the ACEs study, Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, that shows that when children have 3 adverse childhood experiences, which consists an adverse childhood experience can either be physical, like sexual abuse or physical abuse,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but most of the adverse childhood experiences are is emotional abuse, is
yes.
the kind that I'm talking about.
Yes.
3 adverse childhood experiences, 100 times more likely to be addicted, to have divorce, to be a smoker, to have bad outcomes in relationships later in life, and more importantly, to have horrible medical outcomes later in life. Direct relationship between emotional abuse as a child and cancer. Emotional abuse as a child and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease,
mm-hmm.
diabetes,
mm-hmm.
heart disease. Direct correlation between emotional abuse and later morbidity, medical morbidity in
yes.
life. And this was done by the Kaiser Foundation in California, and their model is keeping people out of hospitals. So they got really interested in the question was, how does a childhood experience relate to later medical outcomes? And they were shocked at what they found. And anybody can find a study, just put in ACE or ACEs
mm-hmm.
in Google, adverse childhood experience, and Google it, and the studies will come up and read it, and your jaw will drop.
Wow.
At how bad this is, how pervasive it is. And so what we need to do to get to your original question
mm-hmm.
is if parents could learn how to validate their children's emotions, rather than invalidate them, those children will flourish and do well. And we will, like I said, we will not have a need for prisons in the future
mm-hmm.
if we could teach parents how to do this. The studies show that when you validate a child's emotions starting at about two years old, if you consistently validate that child's emotions by age 8 or 9, it's 2 grade levels ahead of all, the child will be 2 grade levels ahead
wow.
of its peers, that child's peers.
Wow.
It's unbelievable how this works because it's helping the child's brain develop properly. But when you invalidate, you inhibit the proper development of the child's brains.
I know you've been enjoying the conversation, but we're going to take a little break and get a word from our sponsor. So, the whole idea of a branding strategy sounded so exotic and so fancy to me. But after having several conversations with Neon, I now have a clearer understanding. I am sure of what my identity is, what it is that I want people to see Noreen Daly as. Thanks, Neon. Thanks, Splint. Visit them at wearesplint.com. You just gave advice to parents. But as we're wrapping up, just in general, because what then are we saying to others? Because some of us are not parents, and there are people listening who are saying, I don't even plan to be a parent. So what then are we
That's
saying
fine.
To yeah. what then are we saying
Do you wanna
to
have...
others?
Mm-hmm. Let me just put the statement out this way. If
mm-hmm.
you want a close, intimate, loving relationship with a partner of your choice,
mm-hmm.
that you will live blissfully and happily with no arguments and no fights
mm-hmm.
forever,
mm-hmm.
you want to learn these skills.
Okay.
If you want to be a valued, powerful leader in your organization, you want to learn these skills. If you want to help change the world by being an effective, powerful advocate for change, You want to learn these skills. If you just want to be a nobody and not change anything and just waste your life away, don't bother learning. Only learn these skills if you want to make a difference.
Yes.
If you want love, if you want connection, if you want relationship, if you want to be respected, if you want to make a really big difference in the world, then you learn these skills. Otherwise, don't bother.
Mm.
Then you can just live life any way you want, and you'll be miserable, and that's your choice. It's all good. I say there's no law against being miserable. You can be miserable. But if you don't want to be miserable, learn these skills. Then you will never be miserable again. I've been married to my wife for 15 years. We have never had a fight or an argument, ever.
Nice. I'm gonna as we're wrapping up, this is how I'm gonna end. I'm gonna ask you the question again, and you're gonna answer it whatever comes to mind, even if it is something that you said before. Why should a life of peace be attainable and not seen as an elusive goal?
Because we are all entitled to live peaceful lives, and it's easy to achieve if we develop our emotional competency. If we get rid of this myth that we are rational beings, and tell the theologians and philosophers for the last 4,000 years that they were wrong and abusive to teach that, and start learning that we're 98% emotional and 2% rational, and then spend the minimal time and effort it takes to become emotionally competent, a life of peace is more than attainable, and it is certainly not elusive.
Thank you so much for sharing, Doug.
You're welcome, Noreen.
This was Make It Last Podcast. I'm your host, Noreen Daly, where it's all about helping us to have better relationships, not just with ourselves, but with other people. Until next time.
Mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, sisters and brothers, friends for life, won't live in the past. All I wanna do now is making it last. Mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, friends forever, strengthening the ties that keep us together. Mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, friends forever, strengthening the ties that keep us together.